It's Friday, January 8th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman. I'm in Washington. Coming your way, why is it that the United States sees more gun violence and death than most, if not all, other developed nations?
Our tradition of gun ownership is old, to be sure. It goes back to the very earliest days of the country's founding.
We will speak with that expert about that. With all of the political turmoil in the United States, one indication of its economic health is pointing upward. And we join VOA's George Pudich in Las Vegas. He's having fun at the Consumer Electronics Show. All of that and more ahead on International Edition. U.S. President Barack Obama is urging Americans to pressure Congress to tighten gun laws after a string of shooting massacres across the country. During a town hall-style meeting in Fairfax, Virginia, just outside Washington, late Thursday, the president heard from people on both sides of the controversial issue. VOA White House correspondent Mary Alice Salinas has the story.
The president of the United States, Barack Obama.
The town hall, broadcast by CNN, centered on the controversial question, how far should the government go to restrict access to firearms? The president said the U.S. can do more and still protect Americans' constitutional right to own a weapon.
I respect the Second Amendment, but all of us can agree that it makes sense to do everything we can to keep guns out of the hands of people who would try to do others harm.
Earlier, Obama announced executive actions, including expanded background checks and law enforcement. He again chided the Republican-led Congress for rejecting efforts to toughen gun laws and accused lawmakers of bowing to the powerful National Rifle Association lobby. The NRA rejected an invitation to join the town hall. But the president did hear from skeptics, including this rape victim and mother of two.
So why can't your administration see that these restrictions that you're putting to make it harder for me to own a gun or harder for me to take that where I need to be is actually just making my kids and I less safe?
There really is nothing that we're proposing that prevents you or makes it harder for you to purchase a firearm if you need one.
Gun lobby groups have threatened court action.
If the president tries to extend licensure requirements to hobbyists or personal collectors of firearms who sell guns occasionally at gun shows or elsewhere, as a matter of, you know, hobby or personal collection, that would certainly be problematic.
Others say only Congress can address the biggest flaws in gun control laws.
In order to really truly get at these issues, it takes legislation and it takes a Congress willing to stand up to the gun lobby and to voice what the American people have been voicing for 3 years now, which is enough and we need to close these gaps.
The White House says the president plans to keep the debate alive and pushing for voters to counter the pro-gun lobby in Washington. Mary Alice Salinas, VOA News, the White House.
As we continue on this topic, when it comes to death caused by guns, the United States sees far more people killed that way than any other advanced nation, and many wonder how that came to be. We did, and we welcome to International Edition Professor Robert Spitzer. Dr. Spitzer is a professor of political science at the State University of New York College in Cortland, New York. He's authored 5 books on gun policy, including one entitled Guns Across America.
There are several reasons why America has this very distinctive gun culture, but let me say at the outset that contrary to the impressions of some people, most Americans today do not own guns, are not interested in guns, and do not participate in the gun culture. And related to that is the fact that gun ownership in America has actually been declining for about the last 40 years or so. Having said that, America does retain a significant gun culture in American society. Americans who own guns, who like guns, who like to use them, either for hunting sporting purposes or for more political purposes. Our tradition of gun ownership is old, to be sure. It goes back to the very earliest days of the country's founding. It is closely identified with how America won its independence from Great Britain in the 1770s, so it has that political and romantic connotation of Americans scooping up their flintlocks and kissing the wife goodbye and going off to fight the British and then coming home in time for lunch. But that tradition is only part of the story. The other part is that Americans have a long tradition of individualism and of anti-government feeling. And among some Americans, the idea of owning guns is a political statement. It's a way for them to assert their independence, their individualism as they see it. And for some Americans, it's a way to say that I don't need the government, that the government should behave in a way that I think is appropriate, and if it doesn't, why, I might just pick up my gun and use it against the government in some manner.
How does that stack up against the amount of violence that does take place and the number of people killed in the United States by gun violence as compared to other developed countries?
Well, interestingly enough, America's overall crime rates are roughly comparable to the crime rates found in other Western democratic nations. However, guns are much more likely to be used in violent crime and especially in murders. And when you compare America's murder rate to the murder rate in every other Western democratic nation, Americans' murder rate is many times higher. And that's because of the presence of guns. And when you pick up a gun and you're contemplating an act of violence, the likelihood that somebody will be hurt or killed is far, far greater. And that's because firearms are the most efficient way to hurt and kill other human beings. And it's the presence of guns in such violent situations that rockets America's murder rate far, far higher than that of any other Western democratic nation.
So what do you do about it?
Well, there are two things at play. One is the presence of guns, but the other, of course, is the generalized existence of crime. And obviously, not all crime involves guns. In fact, most crime in America does not involve guns. Even most violent crime does not involve guns. In terms of what to do, there is a fierce debate about this. President Obama believes that the government should take more steps to try and keep guns out of the hands of those who shouldn't have them and to go after gun trafficking patterns that produce the presence of guns in the hands of criminals and potential criminals. Some Americans think that average civilians should be armed more themselves as a way to deter crime and to fight crimes when they occur. But the research suggests that that's probably not such a good idea, partly because Americans are killed through gun-related violence every year, but many more Americans die because of gun suicide every year. And that is closely correlated with the presence of guns, and that is a major medical and public health concern.
Where does the NRA fit into this equation?
Well, the NRA is a very powerful interest group. They've been around since the end of the 19th century. They're very effective at engaging in interest group politics. They're not quite as powerful as they would make out and as some people think. Nevertheless, they are a very effective interest group. But I would say that the asymmetry that has long existed, that is to say, in gun politics, the NRA has dominated gun politics for many decades, but in the last couple of years, America has started to change to a place where pro-gun control groups or gun safety groups have exerted more political power, have actually outspent the NRA for the first time in history, and starting perhaps to turn the tables a little bit in the dynamics of gun policy. However, today, with conservative forces in control of Congress, they clearly, and Republican forces, they are closely allied with the NRA and are certainly not interested in congressional leaders are certainly not interested in negotiating with President Obama to enact tougher gun laws. So that's going nowhere in the immediate future.
Dr. Robert Spitzer, professor of political science at the State University of New York in Cortland, New York. He has authored 5 books on gun policy, including one called Guns Across America. Dr. Spitzer, by the way, is a member of both the National Rifle Association, or the NRA, and also the pro-gun control organization, the Brady Coalition. Now, it's about this time every day we check what is trending on social media, and we once again call upon VOA social media guru Andrew Palcheski for that. Gun control a big issue or what?
Absolutely. People using the hashtag #GunsInAmerica as concurrent with this town hall to tweet about what was going on. And after the fact, a lot of people tweeting and sharing their opinions, among them the people who were involved in this town hall. Gabby Giffords, the former congresswoman who was shot in the head at a campaign event but survived that shooting and has now become a gun control advocate, tweeting out her thanks to the president. And she and her husband asked a question last night at the town hall. A lot of people also talking about some of the facts that were spoken about at the town hall. One in particular, that 2/3 of gun deaths are suicides. A lot of people using that statistic and saying that's really surprising. I didn't realize that that was such a big issue. And then on the other side of the debate, you have people saying, oh, this is a staged event. This was pre-selected guests, pre-selected questions. So people, pro-gun people on social media kind of lashing out and trying to discredit this town hall and discredit the president's argument. But a lot of back and forth on the issue, as there always is on social media with an issue as contentious as this.
And that does echo and that mirrors whatever's happening in society as far as this is concerned, probably as far as much. Did you buy your Powerball lottery ticket yet?
I have not, but the last game I did not get any numbers, so I'm bound to get them all right this time, and it'll be a big payoff for me. It's the largest payout in U.S. lottery history, $800 million on the line. Although, as we discussed, after taxes and those kind of things, you don't get quite as much. Somebody actually tweeted that and said, oh, it's only $350 million after the fact, so I'm not even going to bother. What's the point?
You are so young and so naive. You know that, I haven't gotten one number in 2 years.
Yeah, well, a lot of people are saying that on social media, but keeping their numbers very closely guarded on social media, they are willing to share, however, what they're going to do with that money if they win. A lot of interesting things, houses, boats, and private concerts from Adele. I think you could buy 300 private concerts and $1 million each, somebody said.
My question to you is, why? that's Andrew Palczewski, and this is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, JPL, is developing what they call a chemical laptop to help search for extraterrestrial life. The battery-powered device is actually a miniature laboratory that is being equipped to gather and analyze samples in order to detect any material that might be associated with life, such as amino and fatty acids. Once developed, NASA says they'd like to send it out on a spacecraft to a destination such as Mars or Europa, one of the moons of Jupiter. NASA describes the device as a chemical analyzer that's about the size of a laptop computer. And, like a computer, their chemical laptop can be programmed and reprogrammed to perform a variety of functions. The researchers conducted a successful field test of the chemical laptop last year at JPL's Mars Yard, a simulated Martian landscape. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition from the Voice of America. I'm Ira Melman. The U.S. economy had a net gain of 292,000 jobs in December. That is a sign that the world's largest economy, the U.S., is growing at a solid pace in spite of some recent global stock market turmoil and other headwinds. Joining us in studio is VOA's business correspondent Jim Randall. You surprised about this, about the number?
Well, I think the conventional wisdom was that the economy would have a net gain of about 200,000 jobs. The conventional wisdom, Reuters, Bloomberg, people like that, survey economists, and the consensus is whatever it is. And it's sort of amusing to see how right or how wrong they turned out to be. They were way too pessimistic in this case.
What leads to pessimism like that? I know this is a
experience.
Deep question here. Yeah,
right. Experience. Well, but the fundamental thing that's going on here is that job creation. Let's say job creation. There's this enormous churn in the economy. 5 million jobs get destroyed. 5,300,000 jobs get created. So there's a net gain of 292,000. But there's the unemployment numbers and the job creation numbers don't really reflect the enormous churn going on in the economy. There's way more going on than that.
Well, you talk about churn. We can talk about China, what's happening with their markets, especially over the past couple of days. What's happening in China?
Well, I think the fundamental thing that's going on there is they're trying to transition from being the world's workshop, from being from making and exporting things. There's a limit to how much of that you can do. I mean, the world's a big place, but it's only so big. You can only sell so many widgets and doohickeys. They're trying to transition to a a more sustainable future, which is more service jobs and more domestic demand. In the U.S. economy, which is bigger than China's, two-thirds of U.S. economic activity is driven by consumer demand. It's less than that in China. They'd like to change that because that allows them to move up to higher skill, higher value added, more, to a more prosperous future. But the transition from the old way to the new way is obviously very rough.
Well, the question has to be asked. They had the controls on their markets, and then they pulled them off late yesterday afternoon, and all of a sudden seems to be a little bit better. What happened there?
Well, they called it a circuit breaker, and there are circuit breakers in markets all around the world. And if the market plunges, in China's case, 5%, they just stop trading. And the idea is it'll allow everybody to take a breath, calm down, and keep the market from hemorrhaging. What actually happened was that when they pulled the circuit breaker, instead of calming the market, it scared the hell out of the market, and things just seemed to get worse. It rattled investors even more than the market plunge, apparently, and that sort of rippled through the rest of the global economy.
And they've also reduced the value of their money, of their currency, as compared to the dollar. Huh?
They have done that. And that also troubled investors because they took that, rightly or not, they took that as a sign that the Chinese economy was weaker than they thought. And they took it as a sign of no confidence. Because when you reduce the value of your currency, what you do is you make your exports get a price advantage on global markets. And China's exports have been the key driving force in their economy. So if you can boost exports, you can boost the economy. And that's kind of drastic. It's the sort of medicine that worried people who are investing a lot of money in China.
We shall see what happens. It's probably still a pretty volatile situation. So we'll find out in the next few weeks, hopefully. Huh?
Well, if I knew the answer to that, I would not be riding the Metro to work.
Well, that's why I'm playing the Powerball lottery. That is Jim Randall. He is VOA's business correspondent. As always, I thank you for being with us. Informative and fun. Thanks, Jim.
Always a pleasure.
This is International Edition from VOA. When you're a child, you remember asking your parents to go to the toy store. Well, when you're all grown up, you still want to go to the toy store, but it's a different kind of toy store. Guess who got to go to Las Vegas to the Consumer Electronics Show, the biggest toy store in the world for adults? It's VOA's George Pudich. How did you manage to luck out to go to Las Vegas for this thing, George?
Well, as you know, I report on science and technology for Voice of America, and the toys and gadgets were always of great interest for me. So this was the ultimate thing, actually, for me to finally come to the CES and see how it looks like. And it's a heaven, believe me.
We are all jealous of you here back in the Washington newsroom. So tell us about the biggest toys. Tell us what has impressed you so far.
So far, I'm really impressed with drones. Drones are fantastic. They are so much advanced. The electric motors are silent. They are very versatile. They can fly. They can avoid obstacles. They can fly higher. They can fly longer. And you can really control them very, very precisely. The controls are fantastic. And there's one more thing. You can, at least to some of them, you can attach the virtual reality goggles to the controls so that you can actually have a feeling that you're flying. You watch what the camera on the drone is seeing, and it's in 3D, and it's fantastic.
What about technical breakthroughs? Have you seen any yet?
Technical breakthroughs, no. But the autonomous vehicle technology is making great progress. And I spoke with some engineers here from Ford and from Hyundai, and they both told me that the technology is already here. We could actually use it tomorrow if only there were strict regulations, which there are not, of course, not yet, because as we know, this is a slow process. And the other thing is the public has to slowly get used to the fact that, first of all, you will be sitting in the vehicle that you're not controlling, at least not all of the time. And the other thing is the pedestrians have to be, you know, to learn to understand how the autonomous technology, autonomous vehicle technology works.
If you had an unlimited budget, and we both know that you don't, working for VOA, what would you buy?
It would be very hard. I would probably go for a car. You know, cars are really, really good, and some of them, some of the demonstration models are. I mean, the concept cars are fantastic. They look like spaceships. And, you know, if money was unlimited, yes, I would probably go for a car like that.
Well, go ahead. I know you're going to head there today to the convention hall to see what new you find out today. And just imagine that you had the money and put a smile on your face. Thanks, George. I really appreciate it. George Pudich.
Thank you so much.
George Pudich from VOA, reporting from Las Vegas and the Consumer Electronics Show. I have known George Pudich for a number of years. I have never heard him happier. And everybody in the control room who knows George agrees. Thanks for being with us today on International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Make sure you stay up to date by checking voanews.com. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States congratulates the people of Venezuela on the seating of their new democratically elected National Assembly. It was a historic day as Venezuela's opposition took majority control of the National Assembly for the first time in 17 years. The press was allowed access to the legislature for the first time in many years, and state TV broadcast interviews with opposition leaders. State Department spokesperson John Kirby called the seating of the legislature an important and necessary step towards fulfilling the will of Venezuelan voters as reflected in last month's elections. The United States believes the new National Assembly can serve an important function in advancing and promoting national dialogue focused on addressing the social and economic challenges facing the Venezuelan people. However, the Venezuelan Supreme Court barred four lawmakers from taking their seats while it probed allegations of electoral fraud. As a result, only 163 of the 167 lawmakers were sworn in on January 5th. The next day, three opposition deputies were sworn in over protests by members from the legislature's minority, who announced their intention to challenge the move. Consistent with the spirit of the Inter-American Democratic Charter, which both the United States and Venezuela have committed to uphold, the United States calls on all parties to respect the independence, authority, and constitutional prerogatives of the National Assembly. In recognition of the installation of the National Assembly and in support of inclusive and meaningful political dialogue, said spokesperson Kirby, the U.S. again calls for the release of all Venezuelans imprisoned for their political beliefs and activities. As President Barack Obama has said, democracy depends not only on elections, but also strong and accountable institutions and respect for the rights of minorities.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.